Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
95.7 The Game. Now back to 95.7 The Game.
All right, hour number three. We're halfway through here on a Saturday. John Dickinson, Nash Solomon, and it's a pleasure to be joined by somebody that's covered the San Francisco 49ers since 2011. And there is a new way now to find this gentleman's content. SI, All 49ers, publisher of their content now. It's Grant Cohn. Grant, thanks a lot for coming on. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of what's happening with the 49ers, let everybody know how to consume your content now, because you've made a move here within the last few months.
Yeah, you can still Google me. I still have the same name. You could probably find me. Same Twitter handle, but now I'm writing for Sports Illustrated instead of the Santa Rosa Press Democrat. And I have a YouTube channel that I like pump out videos 3-4 a day for, so you can check that out too. Just search for my name. That's about all I got. How you doing, JD? Great to hear from you.
Doing well, man. I miss you. I miss seeing you around the facility. I mean, I don't think all that being said, I don't think we're gonna get. I don't think anybody's gonna be allowed in a facility as far as the NFL goes until probably next end of July, right?
Oh, geez, I hope not. I was thinking I might be able to see one training camp practice, maybe go to one game this year. I don't know. I was thinking, worst case, there would be no road games, but you could at least go to a game and sit in the press box or maybe sit at the 50-yard line because none of these fans are allowed and I could have the best seat in the house. I was thinking maybe it would all work out for me, but maybe it won't. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and you're probably right on that, and I had the same thought you did. Well, if there aren't fans, then they can let as much media as they want in, because everybody can have their own section basically at Levi's Stadium and socially distance. I think you're right. I do think you'll be able to watch. We'll go out and watch. I think you'll be able to watch training camp. I do think the media will be allowed in more so if there are fewer fans, just because of the space issue. But it's going to be fascinating to see how they handle it. It really is. I was just thinking, I think, more of that workroom that we all are confined to for hours every summer and fall.
That's a death trap now. I'm sure we'll never be back in there. I was thinking, you know, the press box that most of the fans don't know listening, but the press box is huge on game day. It's made for a Super Bowl crowd because they wanted Levi's to be able to host that big game. So it seems like probably sports writers won't be traveling this year. So at games, it'll just be the home crew, and there should be more than enough space in that football field of a press box for the 35 of us, I think.
Grant, my man, good to hear from you, brother. I miss seeing you out there, too. We gotta get back to the Hilton after one of these games if we can get out there, right?
It goes down at the Hilton. I would love to, man. Great to hear from you, Nash.
Great to hear from you, brother. All right, Grant, let's start with the one that got everyone on Twitter rolling, as you usually do. Listen, Grant, people listen to what Grant Coase says, whether they agree or disagree. I'd like to say I'm always in favor that I agree with you. You're my boy. But, Grant, you had the story breaking Jamal Adams, the 49ers, quote-unquote, picking up steam. I think, first and foremost, let's get some clarity. What do you mean by picking up steam? Is this thing actually coming pretty close to fruition, or it just conversation starting to arrive? What do you exactly mean by that?
Yeah, that's all I heard, is that it's picking up steam. And the way I interpret it is that, not that it's going to happen this week, but that both sides are interested and they're starting to figure out the logistics of it. Now, I think a lot of teams are interested and a lot of teams are doing their due diligence, but I think it's a good sign that the 49ers recognize that he could upgrade their roster and at least kind of figure out, like, what it would take. Because if they didn't make the inquiry and find out at least what picks would be required, I would think, like, what the hell is going on? I mean, you inquired about Tom Brady, who's 43 years old, but you won't look into Jamal Adams. It seems like it's a no-brainer, and I think they understand that too. So I'm not saying it's going to happen in the next few days, but it seems like the wheels are starting to go in motion.
How much better does Jamal Adams make the 2020 49ers? Let's take what they have to give up or what they would have to pay down the line out of the equation for now. Just Jamal Adams on the 2020 Niners, how much better are they for that?
I think they would go from being maybe the fourth or fifth best team in the NFL, a team that's clearly not quite good enough to beat the Chiefs if they were to face again. I mean, they gave up 31 points against that offense. I think they would go from being that team, the contender, to being the favorite. I think Jamal Adams would make them the odds-on favorite, better than the Chiefs. I think he would give them the kind of all-pro DB you need to combat these modern high-flying offenses, passing games like Kansas City. I think he's so, so good. I mean, he can cover. You can play him in the back end, but you can also play him close to the line of scrimmage, and he can blitz. He does so – I mean, Jaquiski Tartt's solid. Nothing against Jaquiski Tartt, but you'd be going from a solid player to a playmaker, which is a big difference. Jaquiski Tartt never makes the play where you're like, yeah, that play right there is the reason the Niners won the game. He might not be the reason they lose it, but he's rarely the reason they win it. And I think Jamal Adams is the kind of guy who could be the reason they win a game once a month, kind of like Nick Bosa.
So that leads me to my next question, Grant. Since JD said don't factor in what it would take to give up to get Jamal Adams, in your opinion, what do you think it will take?
Yeah, I think the Jets – well, let's look at it this way. The Niners just traded Buckner for first. Jamal Adams is even younger. Is he better than Buckner? Maybe not, but they're both all-pro level players. So I think the Jets would want at least a first-round pick and probably will hold out for a first and a second. Since there's no real deadline approaching anytime soon, they can wait and see if a better offer comes. I'm imagining the Niners, any team would probably start by offering a first and a player or a first and a fourth and see where you could go from there. What the Niners could do is offer their first-round pick in 2021 and then a second or a third in 2022. I think that would be an interesting way to kind of make a compromise with the Jets, and I think the Jets might be interested in that. And I think if the Niners don't do it, you got to worry about the Seahawks swooping in at the end, the Cardinals, the Cowboys, any NFC team, because you put Jamal Adams on the Seahawks, now they might be the favorite to win the NFC West, or same goes for the Cowboys with the NFC. So I think it's something that may not be that expensive. I mean, he's worth the first-round pick, and then the second-round pick that you might give up in 2022 is expensive, but you could get some value back by trading to Jaquiski Tartt. He would bring back probably a third-round pick, and I think that would be pretty much worth it. I would do it. I would pull the trigger. What would you do, Nash?
Honestly, I think you got to do whatever you got to do to bring this guy in. I mean, sure, you're going to give up draft equity down the road, but honestly, Grant, I mean, this is a guy that's probably the best safety in football, and guess what? You were 6 minutes away from winning the Super Bowl, and you didn't win the Super Bowl because a guy named Tyreek Hill had a little deep 20-yard out route down the field that got you the first down. You have Jamal Adams. Maybe he stops that play, and maybe the 49ers win the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the other great thing about getting him is, beyond his age, he's only 24, he's actually kind of cheap. Like the
original deal, right?
Yeah, the Jets would have to pay for a bunch of his money. If the Niners cut Jaquiski Tartt and trade for Jamal Adams, they would actually save money than if they just kept Jaquiski Tartt and played him in 2020. Actually,
wow.
Yeah, that's amazing. So there's really no reason not to do it. It's a flat-out no-brainer. But I think the Niners are going to be smart. You don't just call the Jets and say, whatever you want, we'll give you. You find out and you say, okay, well, what about a first and a fourth? And the Jets say no, and you wait. So I think John Lynch and the 49ers are probably handling it the right way.
Grant Cohn, our guest here on 95.7 The Game, John Dickinson and Nash Solomon talking all things 49ers. Oh, how big is the Deebo Samuel injury considering the fact that the 49ers no longer have Emmanuel Sanders? And I know they like Hurd. I know they like Taylor. I know there's going to be a lot of focus on Ayuk coming in. But how big of a deal is it if, let's say, Deebo Samuel has to miss four games?
Oh, I think it's a big deal. I mean, not that they'll lose without him. I just think it means that they'll have to change. Not because of how dominant he is as a wide receiver. He's good, but because of what he does for the run game. Remember, this is a team that would love to run 47 times and beat you if they can. And when they were doing that toward the end of the season, it was Debo was a big part of their running game. That those end arounds were never stopped the entire season, and you figure they'd become an even bigger part of the offense next year. But with him not in the offense, who does that? You know, it could be Jalen Hurd, it might be Brandon Ayuk, but no one probably does it as well as Debo Samuel. So you have to kind of take that whole concept out of your offense. The jet sweep isn't as effective. The end around isn't as effective. You know, 21 personnel isn't as effective, which is their base configuration with two wide receivers. They might kind of need to go to like a secondary offense for a month, which could work. I mean, there's so many different ways they can beat you, but they might want to try like two tight ends, two running backs, and one wide receiver. And you can't do as much end arounds and stuff, but you can really beat people up the way that Harbaugh's teams used to do it with Delanie Walker and Vernon Davis and Bruce Miller. I mean, why not? The Niners have the personnel for it. You can switch up and beat people a different way.
Grant, so, I mean, we're talking about the Niners personnel wide receivers. Brandon Ayuk's obviously the most interesting name for anybody that wants to follow, watch, or they care about the Niners. I mean, last year we saw this 49er team turn Debo Samuel into what he eventually turned into. It's pretty clear he's their solidified number one guy. Now, looking at that transitioning to this year, how do you see Brandon Ayuk's rookie year playing out if Debo's obviously healthy all year to help him? But just looking at Brandon Ayuk as a rookie, do you think Kyle Shanahan can get him involved similar to how he got Debo involved pretty quickly?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure he'd love to, right? They traded up for him. He's a first-round pick. The expectation is that he should play right away. Debo did last year. They need him to play right away. There's an opportunity. There's two starting jobs vacant right now. It just seems like a lot to ask, though. I mean, he was a one-year starter in college. There's no mini camps, no OTAs. He has to learn his entire Kyle Shanahan offense through Zoom. Could you do that? I don't think I could do that. And he's got to do it. He's 22 or something. Like, he's 22 years old. So they might ask him to, but again, I feel like it's a run-first team. Even if he does start week one, how many targets is he going to get?
Couple.
You know, he probably gets three, maybe three, four, and it'll be in specific situations. So maybe they'll have to play him a lot. He'll be blocking a lot or running some jet sweeps and end-arounds, but I don't think he's going to get seven, eight targets a game right out of the gate. I just don't think they've had enough time to prep him for that.
Grant, what's your feel on where things stand with George Kittle? And should there be maybe a little bit more alarm that a deal isn't done or that the two sides are far enough apart at this stage?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if alarm's the word, but I think people should be paying attention. Because I always go back to Buckner. Why did that fall apart? I mean, Buckner ended up getting $21 million a year from the Colts. What do we think the Niners offered? I mean, they ended up giving Eric Armstead $17 million a year, $17.5 million. So they must have offered Buckner a little more. They have the same agent. I mean, everyone knows Buckner's better than Armstead. So I'm guessing the Niners offered Buckner somewhere between 18 and 19, right? Is that fair?
Yeah.
I think that's okay. About right.
So they offered probably 18. Let's say they offered 19. And Buckner said, no, we'd like 21. And the Niners said, that's a deal breaker? $2 million. That's a deal breaker. And so we're trading you. So, okay, that's the context for Kittle. Kittle, I think, is within his rights to ask for $17.5 million. I mean, he should be the second highest paid player on the team after Jimmy Garoppolo, correct?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I think if the Niners were offering him $17.5 million, I think he'd take it. But I think the Niners think, you know, why do we have to do that? You're a tight end. We can tag you in 2021, pay you $10 million. Kyle Shanahan schemes anyone open. I have a feeling that the Niners and Kittle are about $3-4 million apart. I'm guessing. And that sounds like, well, that's not that much. They can work that out. Well, it was a lot for Buckner and the Niners. And if Kittle's unwilling to come down below $17.5 million, which I think I wouldn't let him go below that if I were his agent, then the same thing could play out with Kittle that played out with Buckner. I mean, do you guys see it different?
Well, I go ahead, Nash. I'll let you jump in. I don't see them trading him, but I do see the point in terms of, you know, being apart on the money. And I'm with you. We were talking, you know, a few weeks ago, and the number I had was 17. You know, 17 to me
fair.
Is like that's about right, really. And But I think you're right. I think the 49ers to me are probably more in like the 13 and a half range.
Yeah. I would agree.
The problem is, Grant, I mean, if you don't pay him, someone's going to eventually. And obviously there's an inevitable trade that you can get on there. But I mean, what would hold them back from really wanting to pay him? Everyone else seems like they're on a team-friendly deal, considering they're a pretty young team on the offensive side of the ball. And guess what? This offense is the way it is because you have George Kittle.
I totally agree. And if it were me, I would have extended this guy already. I think he's worth $20 million a year. 17 sounds like a bargain. He's a better player than Amari Cooper. But what's happening is the Niners just have – they control him. They can tag him. They know it. So why would they really cave to George Kittle? It seems like Kittle, what he would have to do is hold out. And I just don't think he's the kind of guy who would. I'm assuming here. But I think he likes playing football too much. He's played so hard for like $500,000 a season. He's going to ask for a lot of money, but I still think ultimately he'll play for $2 million this year. And if they tag him in 2021, I don't think he would demand a trade. He might, but I still think he will come back and play. And I think the Niners know that, and they're going to use that against him.
Okay, Grant.
Yeah, Grant.
Oh, go ahead, JD, if you had one.
No, sorry, man. I got twisted there. I thought you were up, but I guess I was up. The nature of not being able to see your partner when you're doing the show here, Grant. When you're doing the show from home,
you guys in the studio together. Of course they're not. Of course, right? Got it.
Yeah, I know. There are still these shelter in place rules. Yeah. From time to time, you kind of forget they exist, right? If you're just you're kind of trolling around the bay,
they don't matter. So I don't know.
Oh my God, that's yeah. Good Lord, that's a whole nother. Yeah, that's a whole nother. At what point do you feel like I'm with you? I mean, Kittle isn't going to hold out now, but at what point do you feel it could start to get a little bit ugly or a little bit nasty? Because so much of the 49ers' success, I think, has been scheme and talent and good players and all that, but they've been able to keep a real. They've been able to keep the mood really good and positive and team oriented, and they've had a very good energy even when they stunk. Basically,
right.
Does George Kittle being ticked off, even if it's below the surface about his contract, is that something that you could see maybe seeping over and changing what's been a pretty positive culture to this point?
Well, I think it's a great question, and I think it's something they'd probably avoid. I mean, again, go back to Buckner. They could have had him on a fifth-year option this year for like $9 million, and they didn't want to do it because they knew that would create bad blood. And they wanted to do right by Buckner, I guess, so they traded him. I think it's within the Niners' rights to ask George Kittle to finish out his rookie contract his first 4 years the way Buckner did. But after that, if they give him the franchise tag, that's kind of like giving Buckner the fifth-year option. It's about the same amount of money. And so you think you could expect the same response from Kittle to be like, what the heck are you doing? Why are you doing this to me? Like, I'm a great player, and you're wasting my prime. Can't you just let me leave if you don't want to pay me what other teams would? And I think what Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch have shown is they say, okay, fine, we'll work with you. So I expect George Kittle will come back and play for whatever he $2 million this year and make another run at the Super Bowl. But I think after that, that's it. Either the Niners are going to have to decide to give him their $17 million a year, or they'll do what the Chiefs did with D Ford and tag him and trade him. I would give him the money, but it's Kyle Shanahan here. And again, he really does believe that he can scheme anyone open. And I wouldn't be surprised if he feels that they could trade George Kittle next year for a first, the way they traded Buckner, and just draft the best tight end available, whoever that is, and Shanahan can make him look like a star as well. I mean, that's kind of a cynical way of looking at it, but they're going to have to choose between Kittle and Trent Williams. Trent Williams is going to be a free agent. He plays a more critical position, and he might make even more money than Kittle. So are they just going to let Trent Williams go? They just renegotiated his deal and made it so they can't give him the franchise tag, which is strange because they can give it to Kittle. So if I was Kittle's agent, I'd be thinking right now, wow, they seem a little bit more enamored with the left tackle than my client. Why is that?
All right, Grant, this one might be more of a clickbaity thing than a reality thing, but obviously Antonio Brown's name surfaces around the Niners when we have Deebo Samuel injury. I'm not necessarily asking if the Niners are actually completely interested, but I think I'm more so asking, do you think there's a level of interest due to the fact that the Seahawks have interest, and maybe you kind of want to block him because that's in your division? Is there some valid point to be made there? Like, you almost want to block him to prevent from yourself having to play him twice a year, and maybe even in the playoffs, we know the history between those two teams?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the same logic we're using with Jamal Adams. Like, if the Niners don't get him, the Seahawks might, and that could tip the balance of power. I think the issue, the difference, though, is, I mean, Antonio Brown, it's not just that he's a diva and that he totally torpedoed the Steelers and walked away from them. I think it's the legal stuff. I mean, they're like outstanding lawsuits against him. And I think even if he were to get signed, he might immediately get suspended and put him to the commissioner's exempt list. And then you might have to have him around your facility not playing for an entire season. So I think there's a reason that one of the best, that the best wide receiver of his generation can't get a job. It's probably that stuff. It's not that he's a distraction. I mean, he's not a backup. He's a superstar. I think the minute you sign him, you might lose him. So I think teams probably are waiting because of that.
Grant, final question for you, and this is one that we could probably do a whole show on, just you and I specifically, and it's the notion of, and I think I called it my least favorite topic that's going to become a topic around the 49ers, and it's the Aaron Rodgers topic.
Oh, okay.
Because you and I both, I think, agree that Aaron Rodgers has a weird negative energy that impacts his football team, as great as he is, in a bad light. But yet, at the same time, you know, the way the Packers have carried themselves, and he may be ticked off enough to want out at the end of this season. And the 49ers, if they don't win the Super Bowl and Jimmy Garoppolo looks like just a guy at the end of this season, it would be a natural conversation. How do you weigh the talent of Aaron Rodgers a year from now in Kyle Shanahan's system versus the fact that he is low-key a bad energy, bad vibe, kind of sucks the life out of a team guy? Because he really is, and I don't think a lot of people talk about it unless you really watch the NFL closely on a week-in, week-out basis.
No, I totally agree. And just from a talent perspective, he's up there with Steve Young and John Elway, and absolutely Kyle Shanahan could win a Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers the way Mike Shanahan won Super Bowls with those two. But the issue is his personality. Yes, he's been a malcontent in Green Bay recently, but you could sort of argue that that's deserved, that he's had some pretty bad coaches. I think what I would do if I were John Lynch, if it was pretty clear that Jimmy Garoppolo was plateauing and we would want to, you know, look for an improvement in the offseason, you would have to get Aaron Rodgers and Kyle Shanahan in the room somehow, together, secretly. Have them go out to dinner. See if they can, if there's a mutual respect. And if there is, I would go for it. See if you could have that relationship work for a year or two. I think they could bring out the best in each other and win a Super Bowl. I think Rodgers would like to win one more Super Bowl. And if he's going to get run out of Green Bay, what better place to come than Northern California, where he's from, on a team that's stacked? I think he'd be into it, and I understand why he rolls his eyes when he listens to plays from Matt LaFleur, because Matt LaFleur, I mean, who is he? I don't even know who he is. Like, is he younger than Aaron Rodgers? Why does he have that job? He doesn't deserve it. He's basically one of these Sean McVay guys. Sean McVay's stock isn't even up anymore, and now Matt LaFleur has a job. So I don't blame Kyle Shanahan. Aaron Rodgers. I feel like if he could respect anyone, it would be Kyle. So just get him in a room together. Let him have a beer and some dinner and see if they can coexist. And if not, then move on.
It is a really weird deal with him in Green Bay, because they draft the quarterback. Then it's also, you know, LaFleur kind of got credit for them, you know, being in the championship game. He seemingly doesn't want Rodgers to throw the ball a lot. It's a really odd, it's really a strange dynamic. And I didn't think it could get any weirder than it already was with Mike McCarthy there.
Well, I think it's just a total power struggle. Matt LaFleur comes in, and right away Aaron Rodgers doesn't respect him. This is just the way I perceive it. I'm not over there. But it seems like LaFleur comes in and tries to institute his system, and Aaron Rodgers is like, well, we'll see. And the running game works early in the season, but Aaron Rodgers' numbers are way down, and he just kind of seemed like he powdered his way through the entire year. And he couldn't really talk much about it because they were 13-3. But whenever a game went bad for them, he was just like, rolling his eyes and kind of like giving up in the second quarter, yeah. Which is not what
he did it in the championship game. He gave up in the championship game. He did.
Oh,
he
no,
gave,
damn.
and then Aaron's had a lot of games in his career like that, where he kind of gives up and then he'll throw a couple of touchdown passes and sort of save face. Like he's had a lot of games like that championship game in his career. He really has.
Yep. Yeah, and I want to say one thing. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what the Patriots do this year, because they're kind of doing this experiment, the cheap quarterback experiment, and I think it could work. You know, you don't have to spend $27 million to win on a quarterback to win a Super Bowl. You don't have to have Aaron Rodgers to win a Super Bowl. He hasn't won one in a long time, partially because he's so expensive and the rest of his team can't be as good as other teams. So maybe if, you know, the Ravens win the Super Bowl or the Chiefs win the Super Bowl again or the Patriots have a good year, teams will start to reevaluate the need to spend 15% of their salary cap on one player. And we might see, like, the franchise quarterback, quote-unquote, like Aaron Rodgers, kind of get phased out. Because does having just that one great player make you a Super Bowl contender or a lock to win it? No. I mean, look at the Saints. They haven't won it in more than a decade. So maybe the Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees mega super quarterback era is a thing of the past soon.
Grant, great stuff. Really appreciate it. Love talking football with you. Hopefully we'll get a chance to actually watch some real football here at some point in the next 2.5 months. Thanks again for coming on, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, Grant.
Yeah, I have a feeling this is going to be the closest the three of us get for quite a long time, but it was really nice talking to you.
Good catching up, baby.
Thanks, Grant. Okay. All right, Grant Cohn, now SI.com, all 49ers. Google him. Check him out on Twitter. He's one of the best. All right, we're overdue for a break. We'll come back, and we will continue the conversation here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
All right, rolling along here on a Saturday. It's John Dickinson, Nash Solomon, with you until 2 o'clock. Man, we're flying by today. I'll be honest. A lot of NBA conversation,
yeah.
Too, Nash. Haven't talked this much NBA in a while. I'll
feels
be
good.
Honest.
I was just telling Bobby on the other side of the glass, our big man producing over there, I was like, man, only 3 more segments. The show's flying by. But you know what, JD, when we get a chance to actually talk about something we love in terms of relevancy once again, it don't even feel like work. We're just having normal conversations like we're chilling at Stadium Pub in Walnut Creek.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, no doubt. And did you hear, it sounds like, and I don't know officially yet, I know San Francisco hit the pause on some things yesterday. It sounds like Contra Costa is going to do the same.
Are they going to slow down? I know I've been to, a full disclosure, I've been to downtown Walnut Creek a little bit, wearing a mask, practicing social distancing,
yeah,
but they have set up tables. There's been places to eat and go out and have a few beers. So I have a couple days this week, but as of a couple of nights ago, it looked like everything was normal, but I think you're right. Yesterday kind of changed everything.
It's been awesome, actually. A lot of outdoor, you know, outdoor dining and you know, really everywhere. I mean, spots where there's been, you know, parking spaces used.
Which is so cool. I feel like I'm at like a food fair, JD.
Yeah, it's awesome. It really is. Like, using parking spaces basically to create outdoor, you know, dining rooms at a lot of different places. It's been really cool, and people have adapted. I know San Francisco said they were going to hit the pause button on a few things. That I think they were going to start indoor dining and I want to say maybe even salons and shops. It sounds like Contra Costa is going to do the same. I know gyms were something that were scheduled to open Wednesday.
Oh, the first, right?
Yeah, some levels of indoor dining. There were a couple things that were ready to happen on the first that it sounds like, although the official announcement isn't going to come until Monday, because of a spike in cases over the last week or so, that they may not that they're going to dial, not that they're going to not allow things that they've already been allowing, but that they may not allow anything more.
Just kind of slow the process, right?
Yeah, exactly. So
which that's cool. I mean, if there's anything, I mean, listen, I know we're all trying to do the right thing, staying inside and quarantine when we were doing that. But if there's any way for me just to get out of the house, even do something simple like last night with a friend of mine, we walked around Lake Merritt, had our masks on, social distancing, anything to get out of the house, Shady, to clear the head. Like, I'm all for right now. I am all for it.
Yeah.
Just hope people out there don't ruin that for us.
Just follow the rules as best you possibly can. And you know, if we all do that, we are going to get through this. And the reality is, you know, there is still enough that we can do right now. Like, there's a lot of things we are, like, I know the term lockdown gets used a lot. Like the reality is we're not in a lockdown right now. And we actually haven't been in a lockdown for quite a while. Like, you can go get stuff. You can go get a meal.
Yeah.
You
right.
can take a walk.
It's not like, when only like, Target's the only thing open anymore.
Exactly. Like, and so let's do our best, because we still do have a long way to go in this. You know, we're about halfway through the year, and I think it's going to take at least till the end of the year to get to really get through this. The one thing that we absolutely as a society can't afford is to go back into the type of situation that we were in
right.
in March.
I mean, I'll do my own personal lockdown when NBA's back on TV and I can just stare at the TV all day, but I don't need the rest of society being forced to do that, JD.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, if it reaches that level again around the country, then we're not going to the basketball isn't going to happen.
Right.
And
right.
And that's that. Like, I just want to keep encouraging everybody to just be doing the right things and act right and follow the rules, wear the mask where you're supposed to wear a mask. And you know, again, let's not put ourselves. My one JD PSA for today, let's just not put ourselves where we have to. Hitting the pause button is fair and fine. Let's just not put ourselves in a position where we have to go backwards with this thing and go back like we're going toward April and March.
Because that's to piggyback off that, JD.
That will cripple everybody.
And to piggyback off that, everybody that wants to get back to the real world, guess what? If you don't do your duties now, you're not going to get back there. And back to square one will make things 10 times worse.
Yeah, no doubt. So 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. All right, PSA over. We were talking some football with Grant Cohn. Thanks to him. You know, I really do think, and there are so many storylines, and you know, we got into, you know, I wanted to get into the big ones, right? I mean, Jamal Adams, Antonio Brown, George Kittle, you know, the Debo injury. The one storyline that I do think is going to become a big deal this year and even next offseason is the Aaron Rodgers thing. Like I think that has the potential to become a major story if it starts to look like Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, if there's a year where it's like, well, he's good, but the sentiment becomes, can you upgrade? And there are very few quarterbacks that are upgrades. And I think Aaron Rodgers, if the Packers are running him out or he feels that way or there continues to be friction, I do think Aaron Rodgers, much like Brett Favre, I mean, there's a lot of irony there because Brett Favre, when he kind of got thrown to the side, basically gave the Packers the bird and said, I'm going to go beat you with the Vikings. And for that first year, he did.
Yeah.
They won the division that year after he spent the year with the Jets. But Aaron Rodgers is the same way. Like Aaron Rodgers would be like, okay, I'm going to give you the finger and I'm going to go somewhere and try.
He's
and
exactly
beat you.
The same way.
And I think the 49ers would be a team that could be a match, believe it or not.
I think it's
so
going
to keep an eye on.
Yeah, you're right. I think it's something we'll have to monitor to see. Can he progress his career sort of the way Tom Brady did? I mean, when Tom Brady was hovering around 35, 36, it's almost like his career started all over again. I mean, Brady's last 11 years were better than his first 10. That's just the way it's been for the last decade. So seeing the way Aaron Rodgers ages, what, is he already 35, 36? Probably 36 by now? Yeah, 36. I mean, what, a 38-year-old Aaron Rodgers, this Niner team has a young defensive side of the football. They got young receivers. I mean, maybe Aaron Rodgers is the one little pedigree that you're missing, has the Super Bowl on his belt. And, I mean, it doesn't sound crazy because we're 2 years away, but by then, maybe it will. It all depends how Aaron Rodgers projects his career by then.
Yeah, it's just, it's like I said, it's something that I think is going to be on the, you know, just percolating below the surface.
Right,
you
just
know,
hovering.
It's just, you know, all the storylines that actually matter for this team are going to be first and foremost, and everything going on with will the season even be played and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the one thing that could become, if the 49ers don't win the Super Bowl, if Jimmy Garoppolo looks like a really good quarterback, but a quarterback where there is some question as to, you know, maybe he can't get you over the hump, and Aaron Rodgers and the Packers continues to fray. You know, if they have a down year, if things get weird there, if he seems to be at odds with them, I think that's a story that is at the bottom. You know, it's just below the surface. But by the time the season ends next year, if they don't win it, if the Niners don't win it, we could be looking at a conversation about should the 49ers go after Aaron Rodgers in a similar vein as to, you know, inquiring about Tom Brady or inquiring about Peyton Manning when Jim Harbaugh right. was the coach, because he would be one of the very few that could be considered an upgrade.
Well, and I think it all stems to one thing, right? It's all reliant on Jimmy Garoppolo. The idea that we're all still unsure if Kyle Shanahan's married to this guy, if John Lynch is really married to this guy, if the whole organization's married to this guy. From a locker room standpoint, JD, it seems like all the players click with Jimmy Garoppolo to a very high level. And I think that's been pretty much well documented. George Kittle pretty much went to bat for the guy. But, I mean, the jury's going to be out on him until we really see him be the catalyst. And that's not a detriment on who he is. I mean, this team last year didn't need him to be anything spectacular. But if Jimmy can just get a little bit better, I think the perception on who he is going to change drastically.
Yeah, and I don't think there's anybody, you know, teammate or within the organization that is saying, hey, we got to move on from Jimmy Garoppolo, or hey, we got to get better. Like, I'm not making that claim. I'm just right. more kind of putting it out there as kind of a warning. You know, like, hey, this isn't a story now necessarily, but it's something that, you know, don't be surprised if we're talking about this as a story come, you know, maybe March of 2021.
Yeah.
Again, if the 49ers come up short, if things get ugly between Rodgers and the Packers. So it just, I don't know. I feel like, you know, there's a part of Rodgers that's bent. That he was, you know, clearly bent that he was never a 49er. And I think there's also a part of Rodgers, too, that he's bent that he has never been able to beat him in the playoffs. And so I think, you know, there's an interesting case, you know, to maybe tie those two things together in his mind. I just could see that being the place that he would want to go.
Well, I mean, I know you're obviously you've been on the record saying you're not the biggest Aaron Rodgers guy, correct? I don't think I'm going out on a limb saying that.
Yeah, I just don't like. I just have never liked his demeanor.
I agree,
all.
And I think with a quarterback, you're going to obviously need a little bit better of a demeanor. But I'm kind of defending the point that you've made. You've always kind of been on the side that he might be a little bit overrated, and that's not saying we're taking away from his talent, but the perception of who he is as a quarterback versus what the results really are completely different things. They're different storytales.
No, they are. And look, I went on that tangent a lot in, you know, years ago. and I mention it from time to time.
But it's,
you know,
true, JD. It's true.
Yeah, and it's just but he has, you know, it's funny because he has a lot of games like the game that he had in the championship game against the Niners, where he's pretty much awful, mm-hmm. you know, and then the game gets away. And then right when the game gets away, he'll throw a couple of touchdown passes, and then you'll look up and you'll at the end of the game, you'll be like, oh, you know what? He wasn't that bad. He wasn't the reason they lost.
The empty calorie stats.
And then you look at, well, he wasn't the reason they lost. Well, and then, I mean, you look at that game and it's like, well, they got slaughtered on the run, right? Like, yeah. So it's like he's kind of Teflon. Like he just never really gets any of the blame. And there's been a lot of games where he's put up some unbelievable numbers, but yet the game was kind of a blowout. Like, he's also, in fairness, had some really heartbreaking playoff losses, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that.
But he's also been fortunate enough to have some wild endings to some games as well. I mean, the two Hail Marys stick out in particular.
Yeah, well, and the one, but that's kind of the thing. Like, that Hail Mary game against Arizona is sort of the perfect example. He wasn't good in that game. They were behind in that game in part because he wasn't good in that game. He throws a Hail Mary at the end of that game, forces it into overtime. Everybody goes, oh my God, Aaron Rodgers is the GOAT. And then they don't even touch the football in overtime. So he didn't play well, but he made a play that everybody remembered to force overtime, and then he was never a part of the loss.
Right. Right.
Like, so it's a weird dynamic. You know, and he's had that throughout his career. I mean, Arizona, he played in Arizona the first time, his first ever playoff game as a starting quarterback was in Arizona back in, what, 2010, I guess.
Kurt
it was
Warner
2009.
Team?
It was, yeah, and the Arizona Cardinals had a 40-20 lead or something, a 40-17 lead.
That's right.
And they were awful and they were getting slaughtered. And he, you know, in the fourth quarter of that game, basically led them back to tie it Again, empty calories, but leads him back. Leads him back to tie it from the dead, and then they get the football. They actually got the football in overtime. He missed a deep ball. They went for a deep ball. He missed the throw. I think it was an overthrow. They went for a deep ball to win it, like on the first or the second play. And then the Cardinals dialed up a blitz, and it was a sack fumble that got returned for a touchdown. And the game actually ended right there. I think it was Carlos Dansby took it in for the Cardinals, and that game ended there. So it's like ever since then, he's just kind of had these weird, you know, playoff losses.
Well, I mean, remember the one in 2017? I believe it was against the Cowboys. Remember, like, the end of the game, they were nowhere near field goal range and they have no timeouts. He just chucks one down the sideline because the Dallas Cowboys defense leaves the sidelines wide open and they get a last-second field goal to escape through the divisional round. And here comes Aaron Rodgers again. But really, it's like they blew a lead that game. I think the Cowboys put up, like, 14 or 21 unanswered that quarter, and it looked like, well, why can't Aaron Rodgers move the ball? And, of course, the one throw is last throw of the game. You forget about the whole narrative of the game.
And the Cowboys were... You know, the Cowboys were awful in that game.
Right.
Actually, they were terrible. They were not ready to play in that game. Just ill prepared. You know, there was a game that they should have won. I mean, there's games that they should have won. They should have won up in Seattle in the NFC Championship game the year where they had a 15 point lead with about 5 minutes left in the NFC Championship game, and the Seahawks scored. And then, if you remember, the Seahawks got the onside kick and then scored again. The guy fumbled the onside kick. The Seahawks scored again, had to go for a two-point conversion to tie it, got the two-point conversion, remember, on the Russell Wilson. It was the Russell Wilson where he was all the way to the right, and he threw up a lob back to the left, and the guy caught it for the two-point conversion. That tied the game.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the Seahawks are – otherwise, the Packers are going to the Super Bowl, and Rodgers is going to the Super Bowl for a second time. Tied the game, and then in that game, the Packers didn't get the football in overtime,
right?
Because
we would have had Brady Rodgers, right?
And the Seahawks got it and threw a bomb and scored a touchdown. So, there's been a lot of really, really, really weird losses. And Rodgers did win that Super Bowl his second year, or his third year as the starter. He did win the Super Bowl back in 2010. And so when you win it early, you're just one of the guys that, you know, you're immune, I think, to a lot of the criticism, to where if he hadn't won that, you know, Super Bowl, and again, he did, so it's a silly argument to say if he hadn't won it, because he did win it. But I think people sometimes forget how close Aaron Rodgers is to being a guy that could never win the big one.
Yeah.
Like, to maybe being the greatest quarterback ever to not win it in very weird and strange ways that make you wonder if he's overrated or not. But he did win it. So all of that gets wiped aside and becomes, you know, not part of the conversation.
And in fairness, JD, I mean, the text line's kind of coming down our road a little bit. The 510, Rodgers never had good players around him. Look at his receivers. Yeah, but also a lot of times, like, when you're a really good quarterback, your receivers are who they are because of you. Like, you can make receivers. Sure, they didn't acquire any top-tier talent per se, but what other star quarterback has really gotten a star wide receiver via free agency instead of rather a homegrown receiver? I mean, Brady had Randy Moss a couple of years.
You know what?
I mean, it's not often.
I actually disagree with that take. I actually think from Donald Driver to Greg Jennings.
And that was early in his career, which you've mentioned.
To Jordy Nelson.
And he probably built Jordy. So that goes against, like, what the text line's kind of leaning towards. I think my point so much is like everyone's mad they didn't draft the receiver in the first round. They got the quarterback. Sure, that makes sense. But he can't go to his front office and demand, like, I need star receivers around me. Like, quarterbacks don't always do that. But I know, but like, it goes back to what you're saying, like, his demeanor. What quarterback does that?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. But I just think, you know, remember JaMychal Finley?
Star tight end at one point.
I don't know. I think, you know, they had more talent, you know, guys like Cobb and Adams.
That's true.
I mean, I don't know, man. Like, I actually think there's a lot of talent. I think he's actually played with a lot more talent, believe it or not. That's actually been part of my argument.
Well, that 2014 in specific, I think they had Jordy, Davante Adams, and Cobb all pretty much at their peak, it felt like. Well, yeah. Not Davante Adams maybe now, but back then was on the trajectory going upwards.
Yeah, and then they went and got Jimmy Graham, and they went and, like, I mean, and he was obviously, you know, beyond, you know, that wasn't Jimmy Graham in his prime by any stretch. But I don't know. I think it's a little bit, of revisionist history to say that he hasn't played with a lot of talented guys to throw the football to. I actually think he's played with some damn good guys to throw the football to throughout the course of his career.
I know we're up against it, but maybe we could talk about the other side. I'm kind of interested to see if, like, Aaron Rodgers' career ended the way it looks like right now. Like, no more Super Bowls after that. Like, how will we remember him? Like, will he be up there amongst the greats? Because people say talent-wise, he's maybe the greatest ever. And it's kind of crazy.
We will. Yeah, no, we will for sure. He's one of the greatest ever, for sure. Like, I know what you're getting at as far as I definitely think if he only ends up winning the one Super Bowl, I do think there's a conversation to be had for, you know, should he have won more? Is his career a little bit disappointing because of how great we believe him to be?
Yeah.
Like, if he was that great, should he have won three?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or I do think that's a fair conversation, but he did win one, and you do get credit for the one you win.
Very true.
So I think he will be still considered one of the, you know, one of the all-time greats, without a doubt. All right, 3 hours in the books. Final hour straight ahead. We'll talk, you know, we can talk some Warriors. We can talk some Giants. We'll reset maybe the NBA schedule coming out a little bit on the other side. And man, I got a lot of different things that I jotted down that we can get into.
Let's do it.
888-957-9570. That is the phone number. It's John Dickinson, Nash Solomon. We're here on 95.7 The Game.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.